We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. Justin Spears here with Michael Lev and Ryan Finley. We're here at the Arizona Daily Star studio recording a new podcast talking all things Arizona Wildcats and Pac-12 football. Usually we go through our Pac-12 picks at the end of the podcast, but it's going to be a little shorter this week because we have the Pac-12 championship between the Utah Utes and the Oregon Ducks. But before we get into everything, make sure you download the Wildcaster app. It's free and available on the App Store and Google Play. Also subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts. So guys, last time we spoke to each other in this room, it was before the Territorial Cup. Then Arizona loses to the Sun Devils 28-14 up in Tempe. And I've had a chance to ask both of you guys this on my radio show, but I want to get your guys' second opinion on this. You know, after the game, I thought it was really telling that athletic director Dave Hickey gathered all the media after Kevin Sumlin's press conference and denied any rumors that Kevin Sumlin would not return to the Wildcats in 2020. From your guys' perspective, what does that say about Dave Hickey standing up for Kevin Sumlin?
I think that he just wanted to clarify the situation. He wanted to create sort of a clean slate for the recruiting period here. He wanted to make it crystal clear to everybody, this is what we're doing. Kevin Sumlin's going to be our coach in 2020. Let there be no ambiguity about it. Put the rumors to rest and sort of set a course for the next year, beginning with this really important period for the program where they have to nail down some recruits, they have to hire a defensive coordinator, maybe some other coaches as well during the next couple weeks. And it's really hard to operate when there's speculation about the future of your coach. So I think that he wanted to just put it all to rest. I think he has a policy about not speaking about coaches during the season. So once the season was over, that policy was no longer in effect. And he went ahead and clarified the situation for everybody.
I will say this, though. If you have to hold a media gathering at the end of year two to say that your football coach is staying, that probably means that there's a lot of work to be done within the football program. And I think that's something we can all agree on at this point, starting with recruiting. And Arizona's gotten a nice little bump in the days since then, right? Regent Terry, is it Regent?
Reagan
Terry, thank you. Reagan Terry verbally committed, Monday?
Yeah, and then he got it. Then last night he got an offer from USC. So we'll see where that goes.
We'll see where that goes. But, you know, Arizona seems to be at least getting a little bit of a recruiting bump from it. We can talk all day about why Arizona would choose to stick with Kevin Sumlin and what challenges sort of face them. But I will give Dave Hickey this. You know, he sort of nipped that in the bud pretty quickly Saturday night. All of the sort of talk and rumor about what would happen to Kevin Sumlin, it's kind of gone away. And now you focus on who Kevin Sumlin can hire. And the skeptic in me says, well, if you know that the coach is already on the hot seat, why would you come to a place like Arizona for 1 year? Or if it could only be 1 year. And I think the answer there will be money in a multi-year contract. If Arizona can secure a little bit more money than it had been paying its previous coordinator, if Arizona can get a multi-year deal similar to the one that both coordinators are working under, Arizona might be able to go out and get a permanent defensive coordinator who might give them a little bit more of an edge, and you build from there.
You can turn around a defense in a year's time. I'm not saying that Arizona can go from 11th or 12th in the league to second or third in the league, but all we've kind of been chasing here is getting to the middle of the pack. you know, we're operating under the assumption, I think, that the offense is going to be pretty good. I know that the results were not good at all at the end of the season, but it's going to be a totally different look next year. I think there's going to be clarity at quarterback. The identity of the offense is going to be clearer with likely, you know, Grant Gunnell being the one running the show. So we're just going to assume they're going to score points. If they score points and they can be decent on defense, then they can improve as a team. You do not have to go from the bottom to the top to make a tangible difference, because they've been stuck at or near the bottom for a long time. So, you know, any sort of incremental improvement will be viewed as kind of a victory.
What do you think is the number of wins that gets the hot seat cool for Kevin Sumlin? What do you think they have to do for him to not be the subject of this again next year?
Okay, well, I think that it's a minimum of six, first of all. But there's sort of a caveat to that. I think the six has to include beating Arizona State.
Just about to say that.
You know, if you go 0-3 to start out your career against ASU, that's a bad look. That will not endear you to the fan base around here. That's one thing I've learned over my, you know, 4 years here at the Daily Star, is that ASU game does matter more than all the others. It really does.
Jim Harbaugh's learning that.
Yeah, right. 100%. 100%. I mean, Michigan, what? They go 9-3, 10-2 every year, but they get blown out by Ohio State. And that's all anyone talks about throughout the entire offseason. And Kevin Sumlin mentioned that after his press conference. He's like, we don't have another game. That's the last game. That's the last impression. That was the last impression of the 2018 season, that blown lead in the fourth quarter. So it is a very big deal. So it's sort of a two-part question. You know, it's like, yeah, there's a certain number of wins that he has to get to, but he also has to beat Arizona State in the process.
But the thing I'm scratching my head at is, defensively, Colin Schooler, Tony Fields, and Kylan Wilborn, weren't all three of them freshman All-Americans in their first year at Arizona?
True.
And you have an experienced secondary with guys like Jace Whitaker and even Scotty Young Jr. What happened over the last couple of years where this defense really dropped off? Because if you were to tell me that group of guys from 2017 where they really shine, they'd be in 2019, I'd say Arizona would have one of the best defenses in the Pac-12. But they ended up being the worst defense in the Pac-12.
It is a great question. I was talking to someone who had conversed with Dusty Dvorak, mm-hmm. who did the color for the game for ESPN. And I think he did the UTEP game back in 2017, which was that 2017 or was that 2016?
That was 2017.
2017, early 2017 season. That's right. And they won that game like 63-16. I mean, it's UTEP, mm-hmm. whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's when those guys were all kind of just starting out, those freshmen, and they looked really good. And he figured these guys are all going to get better. This defense is going to be pretty good in a couple of years. I kind of thought the same thing. I think a couple things. Number one, composition of the defensive staff. They have not had a real linebackers coach since 2017. Scott Boone was the guy in 2017. Since then, it's been Marcel Yates or John Rushing. Neither one of them had a background in coaching linebackers. I mean, I'm sure they know more about defense than I ever will, but they've never coached linebackers before. Not until Hank Hobson took over did they have a real linebackers coach. And then, you know, Kylan Wilborn, I kind of lump him in with Jalen Harris and J.B. Brown as guys who haven't gotten better, because I don't think they hired the right defensive line coach to develop their skills. If you look at the progress of the defensive linemen under Yonah Yungalale, the defensive tackles got better. The defensive ends did not. I think it's really a different position. Honestly, I don't think you can coach them the same. I think the edge guys have to have their own coach. And I think that whoever Kevin Sumlin and the new defensive coordinator bring in, they need to address those two positions specifically with coaches who know what they're doing to develop those players.
Can I give you an oversimplified answer? I think that we should have been concerned when PJ Johnson left for the NFL. I mean, he was such a, I don't, irreplaceable just by virtue of his size and position player for them. To me, when you ask what went wrong this year, I think the defensive line went wrong. I think that that's part of the reason why the defensive line coach was fired. I think that it's really hard to play the other positions if you're not getting a rush on the quarterback. And we saw this year how many total sacks. How many sacks did they have at the time Marcel Yates was fired? Like four?
No, I think
eight?
It was six. I think it was six.
Six?
And seven games. I'll look it up.
It was six and seven games. And then, I mean, they finished with a little bit of a better rush on the quarterback. But
yeah, they had 10 over the last four games.
Right.
So it was seven in the first eight games.
Right. Yeah. Seven in the first eight games, 10 in the last four.
Yeah.
I mean, even then, that final sack total is not good. And to me, when you ask what went wrong this year, I think they were simply unable to replace PJ Johnson. And good for PJ Johnson. He's collecting an NFL paycheck. But I think that his departure set this program back.
It did. It was a surprise to a lot of people that he didn't come back. But you know, if you're a good program, you're able to overcome those types of things. I mean, we're not talking about a quarterback here. We're talking about a defensive tackle. A really good one, for sure.
It's easier to get a quarterback than it is to get a good defensive tackle.
That's actually a good point. No, that's a very good point. Defensive tackles are the hardest thing to find. I've said this myself many times. All right. So I'll take that one back. But I think that losing PJ hurt. I think losing Isaiah Hayes hurt. You know, that free safety position was problematic. They ended up about midway through the season actually switching Jace Whitaker and Scotty Young's roles. They put Jace at the free safety and Scotty at the bandit position, sort of less center field type duties. And I think that Scotty actually played better down the stretch than he did earlier in the year. But, you know, we've always talked about, oh man, Arizona's got so many safeties. They're set at safety. They really don't. And that's a position that they need to address, whether that's bringing in new players or moving like the right guy over there. I have said, I don't know if I've said this on a podcast or not, but I think Christian Roland Wallace could be an awesome like free safety.
He's got the body for it.
Doesn't he? And he's a really good tackler. I don't know if he has the pure like turn and burn type speed to be an elite corner, but I think he could be an elite, like really good, like all conference level free safety. If they wanted to put him in that position.
And boy, did he struggle. I thought, especially the last, four games, at corner.
Well, yes and no. Like they didn't throw at him very often, in the ASU game especially, but
right.
The one time they did, it should have been a touchdown,
right.
And Frank Darby dropped the ball.
Right. And he got beat for two early touchdowns. Was it against Oregon and against Utah?
Oh, yeah. You know, he's gotten beaten a bunch of times this year.
First drive against Oregon State.
Oregon.
Yeah.
Yeah, Oregon State. And against Oregon, he had the miscommunication with Jace Whitaker. Remember right at the beginning of the game, and the guy broke free. Like, really talented kid. I've heard nothing but good things about him. Like, when I look at him and I think about the problems that they have, and I also think about the players they have coming in, I feel like he's a candidate to move to that position, and I think he could be really good at it.
Real quick, before we talk about the next steps for Arizona as a program in the offseason, because they got to do a whole bunch of recruiting. They got to find out who's going to be on their defensive staff. But real quick, I want to get your guys' thoughts on this. Khalil Tate played his last game as an Arizona Wildcat. Statistically, one of the best quarterbacks to ever do it here at Arizona. How will you remember Khalil Tate as a quarterback at Arizona?
I think it's complicated. I think his legacy here is complicated. I'm not sure I've ever seen a player in Arizona football history play as well as he did that night against Colorado, and really in the month after. I mean, he was electric. He was must-see TV. Did he develop, though? No, I don't think so. I think that there were some cracks by the end of his, sophomore season in 2017. We saw some cracks at the end of the Purdue game there. Obviously, he did not adjust to Kevin Sumlin and the new offense, and you could argue that the new offense did not adjust to him last year. And, you know, I think by the end, he was probably, and Lev, help me out here. I don't want to say he was a distraction, but I think that the fact that he used to be as good as he was probably kept the coaching staff from making a decision to start Grant Connell most of the time. I think that people were trying to recapture whatever it was that he had 3 years ago this season, and I think the results were somewhat disastrous. I feel bad for him because, you know, the people who I know who know him like him and think that he's a kid who, you know, really, you know, might have been surprised by all this attention and all this success so early in his career. But, you know, he leaves a complicated legacy and something that we probably won't appreciate for another couple of years. Maybe we'll be able to put it in perspective more once, you know, Khalil Tate is gone and they've replaced him with somebody else.
Yeah, I think Ryan made a lot of really good points right there. And I think we would remember Khalil Tate a lot differently if he had beaten Arizona State one time, which he did not. He went 0-3 against them as a starter, or if he had won a bowl game, which he also did not. He had one opportunity in the Foster Farms Bowl. It was a back-and-forth game. They rallied, and then he threw an interception at the end. I mean, you know, we've talked about it many, many times, like extraordinarily talented player. Like he came within a foot of maybe making like the greatest play in Arizona football history if he hits Shun Brown on that streak near the end of the 2018 Territorial Cup. You know, it would have been like 70 yards in the air, like an 80-yard touchdown to win the game. I mean, it would have been incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, who would even think to try that play?
I mean, they would have put up a statue of that play had that play worked.
Yeah, it would have. I think it would have. It might have surpassed the Chuck Cecil 106-yard interception return if he had pulled that off. I mean, what if he had gotten another yard in the Hawaii game and they had won the game on like a 44-yard like run by a quarterback at the end of the game? Can you imagine?
What if he isn't sacked at the end of the first half at ASU three years ago in 2017? You know, I mean, what if they just take three knees and go into the locker room? I mean, are we talking about a different guy? Are we talking about a different outcome?
Yeah, he's sort of an endless source of fascination, you know, and there's just a lot of like what could have been, a lot of what ifs. The biggest lingering mystery to me is why didn't it work between Khalil and this coaching staff? What do you think, Justin?
I guess not meeting in the middle.
Yeah, right.
Compromising. Because did Noel Mazzone really bend for Khalil Tate? Did you see a lot of design runs over the last couple of years from Khalil Tate? I sure as hell didn't compare to Rod Smith's offense.
Yeah, I mean, I
But was
agree.
There a desire on the quarterback's part to run either?
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know either. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm pretty sure he wanted to develop his pocket skills as well. It's not like, you know, remember, you know, I didn't come here to run the triple option. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Like Khalil Tate wanted to become an NFL quarterback and probably still does, which requires developing your pocket skills. I mean, obviously we have seen, we talked about it before we went on air, like what Lamar Jackson is doing right now in Baltimore. It's an offense totally catered and designed to his skills. And there's really been about one offensive coordinator who's done that in the NFL in the last 10 years, Greg Roman. He's done it twice
with
Colin Kaepernick and now Lamar Jackson. But Khalil wanted to develop his pocket skills. Kevin Sumlin and Noel Mazzone came in and they wanted to do the same. I remember the way that someone put it back in the summer of 2018. It's like, we want to turn this guy, you know, who's an athlete playing quarterback into a quarterback who happens to be a really good athlete. And what's funny is we thought we saw that transformation happen at Colorado this year. Like that was it. Like that was the breakthrough. And then it all fell apart right after that. Mm-hmm. You know, which just sort of adds to the mystery of the whole thing.
I think the irony is that Khalil Tate said 2 years ago, what, next month or 23 months ago, that he didn't come to Arizona to run the triple option, presumably because he wanted to play in the NFL. I think that the NFL is as friendly a place for triple option quarterbacks now as it's ever been. And had he known and had we all known then, Michael Lev, that Lamar Jackson would become a thing, that Deshaun Watson would become a thing, that the athlete quarterback would become sort of the trend. Pat Mahomes.
I say Josh Allen.
Josh Allen.
Did you see Josh?
Yes.
Josh Allen's athleticism is extremely noticeable. Even when he just like sort of tries to buy time in a play, like you're like, wow, this guy can really move. He can really sling the ball. He's kind of wild. I mean, I almost think that's the best comp.
Absolutely.
For Khalil. Like he's just a colt.
Yeah.
Like who hasn't been totally like broken in yet, you know?
Right. But had we known then, I think that quarterbacks would be more athletic in the year 2019 than they've ever been. Maybe Khalil Tate would not have been so reticent to run that kind of an offense. You know, I think that, I don't know. It's just, to me, that's the tragedy of all of this, is that he tried to turn himself and the coaches tried to turn him into a pocket passer. I think that there's actually a route in the NFL now where you can play even if you're not a pocket passer.
Yeah. So many what ifs. I mean, we could spend an entire podcast series even probably talking about the Khalil Tate era. His career's over. We're still talking about him. He's just one of those guys.
He's going to get a, spot in the NFL, though.
You think so?
He's going to get a roster spot.
As what?
As a quarterback. I do think so. Like I think he will get a
practice squad, maybe?
Yes, okay. Practice squad. Right. I'm not saying he's going to get drafted or anything like that, but I'm just thinking with Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson and Josh Allen, these are quarterbacks that have proven guys with his skill set can, in fact, at least have a spot in the NFL. Somebody compared him to Lamar Jackson on Twitter, and I was like, no, Lamar Jackson is way better. He was actually a Heisman winner. He had a way better college career. So I think it's Lamar Jackson's in his own category compared to Khalil Tate. But I still think Khalil can find himself either working with an NFL team during preseason or at least on a practice squad.
I think, like, sort of dovetailing off what both of you guys are saying, is that coaches are more open-minded to that type of player and that type of system now than they used to be. Like, Andy Reid might look at him and go, like, you know what? Like, he's got some Patrick Mahomes-like physical skills. If I get him in the building, get him around my coaches, get him around Patrick Mahomes, maybe some of this will rub off, and I can have someone who could step in a pinch in a backup situation or develop him, look really good in the preseason, and then trade him for another asset or something.
Right. Watch me take this off into a Chicago Bears direction for 1 second. You know, when Mitch Trubisky was supposed to be the next big thing, you know, they were running the same offense that Patrick Mahomes is running in Kansas City. The problem with him is that when he got hurt, his backups were guys my age and older and my athletic ability and older and worse. Does that make any sense? Is there aren't enough great athletes out there in the NFL right now to successfully back up all the great athletic quarterbacks. And I think that Khalil Tate's one chance here is going to be sitting there and saying, you know, I can make some of these plays. If Deshaun Watson goes down, you're not going to replace him with one of the McCown boys. Right, you're going to replace him with somebody who can actually do those things with his feet and with his arm. Will it be a work in progress? Yes. Will he have to be a practice squad guy for a couple of years if he's going to make it? Yes. But I think that's he has the athleticism necessary, and not a lot of guys have it.
Not to get this thing really off the tracks here, but that's kind of why I've always wondered over the last couple of years why Colin Kaepernick hasn't latched on with a team as a backup, because if you run that type of system, wouldn't you want to have a similar quarterback as your backup? I mean, that's why RG3 being Baltimore's backup makes so much sense. Like, you don't really have to change the offense if you bring him in, but that's a whole different subject, so I don't want to go there.
And also, I know Khalil Tate has been probably one of the more criticized Arizona players in recent history, but he definitely took a step in the right direction in terms of maturity this past year. I think, he could have been sour after that game against ASU. You know, you look back at the game last year, you know, Lev asked him about, you know, the interception and a couple other things, and he doesn't even answer. He just turns his cheek the other way, where completely different in the press conference. He's actually somewhat had a smile on his face. Like, he was just so grateful and appreciative of his time at the University of Arizona. I thought that was really cool to see Khalil Tate actually be like that in a post-game press conference.
No question about it. I really appreciated that. I think everybody in the room did. The way he handled that whole situation. I mean, talk about when he could have been sour. He really could have been sour after the Utah game, you know, senior night, when he didn't get to start in his final home game and, you know, really didn't have that, you know, significant of a role in the game. And he didn't, you know, he could have said something on social media or put out some sort of bad vibe or bad message, and he didn't do that. You know, things didn't end up the way that he hoped, or really any of us hoped, when it looked like this could really be something special in October 2017. But I think he sort of understands that, hey, that's kind of how life goes sometimes, you know? Like, he talked about it after the game. Like, there's a lot of ups and downs, and you have to kind of ride the wave and learn from those experiences.
He also graduated from the U of A in 4 years. Did you? Mm-hmm. Okay, I did not. I was on the 4.5-year plan. there's something to be said for that, too, and maybe it's a testament to where we are in the world that we have to say, no, but the good news is he graduated. But he graduated on time. I mean, he graduated on time knowing that he was going to be here for a fifth football season. He could have been on the 4.5-year plan, and he didn't. And I will give him credit for that, too. I think we've seen a lot of growth. I wish we would have seen more consistency during his time in Tucson.
He should do, or I shouldn't say he should, but that would be the ultimate petty move. He goes on Twitter and says, you know what? I wouldn't mind running the triple option right now. But we could talk about Khalil Tate. We do a whole podcast on him. Let's talk about offseason right now. Arizona enters the offseason. They're out there recruiting. Kevin Sumlin was out in Florida and Louisiana. He also was going around the state of Arizona. And then just so happened the day afterwards, Reagan Terry commits to Arizona. You mentioned the USC offer. Now, granted, USC did offer Jordan Morgan. They did offer Christian Roland Wallace. Both of them said, we're going to stick with the Wildcats. But when you have a program like USC, you know, hovering over you, it kind of makes you a little bit nervous. I know Hank Hobson, the interim linebackers coach, he was on the road recruiting. He was up in Utah. He did an in-home visit with Mason Cobb. They're just all over the place right now. So recruiting is a big part here, but we're all wondering about what's going to happen with the defensive coaching staff. We haven't heard anything yet, but what do you guys think about the coaching search as they enter the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, they do a really good job of keeping these things quiet. And believe me, I've inquired, tried to find out what's going on. One thing that I did learn is that they've got what's called like an emergency hire approved for this, where they don't have to post the job and then wait 10 days or whatever the state regulations are for the defensive coordinator specifically. I think the other assistants will have to follow that protocol. So whenever they, you know, come to an agreement or figure out who that guy is, they can pretty much, you know, sign the paperwork and, that guy can start the next day. So I think that's good. I guess the question I have though is, do they need to do this in the next 10 days or so for the sake of the early signing date? Or does it really not matter that much? Because Kevin Sumlin's going to be the coach regardless. Seems like most if not all of the other coaches are going to be back. I mean, can they just sort of like outline what the plan is? Or if you're a recruit, do you need to know who my coach is going
to
be?
I'm not sure you need to know. Given Kevin Sumlin's reputation as a recruiter, maybe a defensive recruit would be more, you know, I mean, if Kevin Sumlin can come in and close the deal, I'm not sure a recruit would be too concerned. You know, that said, Lev, we have to touch on this a little bit. Most of the coaches are out recruiting. Chuck Cecil is not out recruiting. Correct?
That is correct.
Right. And so, I mean, that would lead one to believe that Chuck Cecil is probably not going to be the defensive coordinator.
I think that you can put two and two together there. Yes.
Right. Right. You know, to me, I guess, I don't know. I don't think you need a guy. It all depends who you're going to get. I mean, this is what it all comes down to, right? If you have to wait until after the bowl game's over to hire the guy who you want, you wait. You wait for that guy. Yes. If you can get somebody right now, and I don't know who that would even be. If you can get somebody right now, you do it, but I'm not sure that's a prerequisite. If a guy says, hey, I want to finish out my year as the linebackers coach at Alabama, you say, yes, sir, that's fine. We'll see you when you get here. Right? I mean, even if it hurts your recruiting in the short term, getting the right guy is more important than getting the right player.
I would agree. Yeah, and I think that particular coach's job one for him is to develop the players who are already here. You know, Kevin Sumlin's probably, if they go 4-8 or something next year, there's probably not going to be a year 4. You know what I mean? So they need to win right away. I think that's what has to be the, you know, the biggest factor that Kevin Sumlin is weighing right now is who can come in and turn this thing around immediately. You know, give us some sort of a different feel and look on that side of the ball so we can win some games or else it's not going to matter. So I'm not going to be around anymore.
What do you guys think though about co-defensive coordinators? Not just one guy that can oversee the entire defense, but have two guys that can share the same role and complement each other. One is more X's and O's. One can maybe, you know, focus on linebackers or other things and also be a recruiting coordinator.
Yeah, that has worked in other places. I don't mind it that much if you have the run game coordinator and the passing game coordinator, but it has to be clear whose job it is to call the plays. Make the calls on game day.
To me, that's usually a technicality. It's usually a way to give somebody a little bit more money is to give them the job title of co-defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I think Marcel Yates had that when he was at A&M, and right. He didn't have any play calling responsibilities.
Right. So, you know, I think that might matter more to fans than to anybody else. You know, I think that the coaches know who's calling the plays. Did you guys see the Jimmy Lake press conference yesterday?
I did not.
Or was it, I'm sorry, 2 days ago. 2 days ago. One of the things that Jimmy Lake said, and they asked about him, he said, you know, I'm all about X's and O's. You know, this is what I'm, passionate about. My favorite things in the world are X's and O's. And because of that, you're going to see us be more aggressive. You're going to see us mix it up a little bit more. Arizona needs its version of a Jimmy Lake. It needs a guy who's going to come in and be all about film, all about trying to develop the players that they do have. I'm not sure Arizona's problem in recent years has been recruiting as much as it's been development. And those are two very different things, right? Arizona, in my opinion, is always going to get just about the same caliber of kid, right? Three stars, some four stars. You get lucky maybe with a transfer here and there. The question is, how are you going to develop them? Dick Tomey developed players. Mike Stoops developed players. I don't know if Rich Rodriguez did. I'm not sure if Kevin Sumlin did or is. To me, you need somebody who's going to come in and make your three-star recruits four-star players.
So if that's the case, then you wouldn't want someone like Antonio Pierce necessarily, would you? Because his reputation is more of he's a big-time recruiter. He's a motivator, but not necessarily someone who's got the experience or acumen to be that, incredibly, sharp X's and O's defensive coordinator guy. And he's never really had that role either, right? I mean, that's not Danny Gonzalez ran the defense for ASU, this past year. So that being said, I still think that there's a lot of merit to bringing him in because he's an Arizona football player, not an ASU football player. He's got tons of ties in Southern California. You do need talent. Maybe you can bring in some four-star players, but I think your overall premise makes a lot of sense, Ryan, that, Arizona's going to get mostly three-star type players, with the occasional four-star thrown into the mix. And we've seen at other places around this league where you can take those players and turn them into something where, what is the phrase? The whole is greater than the sum of the parts. I mean, look at Utah. How many of these Utah guys who are NFL bound players, by the way, on the defensive side of the ball, how many of them were four stars?
Not many.
Not many.
Not many. Mike Stoops, when I covered Arizona football, and Mike Stoops would sometimes speak in riddles a little bit, and it's sort of these coaching phrases, but you'd pick up on it a lot. He used to say, you get who you're meant to get. And as a young guy covering the team, I was always like, what a cop out. Oh, that's loser talk. That's what you get when you don't get five star guys. As I've gotten older and as I've witnessed more and more recruiting, I'm convinced that Arizona gets who they're meant to get, right? They're never going to get USC's recruiting class. And if they start getting USC's recruiting class, investigate them, right?
Isn't that what happened to Ole Miss?
Yeah. Yes. What you need is a developer. What you need is an X's and O's guy. What you need is somebody where football is the most important thing in their life. Now I sound like Rich Rodriguez. It matters to him, right? I think if you're looking for a coach, somebody like a Danny Gonzalez has been a perfect example. He's a guy who, did more with less at San Diego State and now is doing, I think, more with less at ASU. Find your version of Danny Gonzalez and get him here now.
Did you just say you wanted OKG? I haven't heard OKG in forever.
He just wants San Diego people, basically. Tyler Huntley was a three-star. Lakey Fotu was a three-star. Julian Blackman was a three-star. Just some of the guys you'll see on Friday night in Santa Clara. Zach Moss was a three-star.
And there's a reason why Kyle Whittingham has been there for as long as he's been there.
No, and it's sort of a chicken and egg thing, too. Like, a lot of people were upset about Kevin Sumlin being retained, but continuity is really important. It's really, really important. And, not to steal your segue here, Justin, but, I mean, can you make an argument for continuity in keeping Clay Helton as the USC coach? I mean, we have some big coaching news in the Pac-12 this week. It started with Chris Peterson surprisingly stepping down, and then it continued with Clay Helton being retained. And I don't think anyone foresaw either one of those two things. Ryan, you have a take that you're just dying to get out there about Clay?
Oh, no, I have a very unpopular take. In fact, I said before we went on air, I was like, well, if things get boring, I can jump in with my unpopular Clay Helton take. I think they're buying themselves a year, and I think that's kind of smart. Mike Bone is a new AD. I think it gives him a year to feel out the football program and what's really needed, and whether that's a new head coach or whether that's new coordinators or whether that's a different approach. I think that, more importantly, it buys them a year to see if they can talk, I don't know, Chris Peterson into coaching at USC, or maybe, I don't know, Urban Meyer. I mean, why did USC wait as long as it did to announce that Clay Helton would come back? To me, the speculation would be that they were talking to other people to see, to gauge their interest in USC.
Urban Meyer.
Or possibly Urban Meyer. Maybe Urban Meyer said not now. Maybe he didn't say no. Maybe he said not now. And
or maybe there was pushback from some people who didn't want, you know, Urban Meyer with his baggage to USC. Or maybe the health, maybe his health issues are a real thing.
Well, and USC's got enough baggage at the moment. Right. Some of that baggage may not be here a year from now, right? Maybe a year from now, they've settled the college bribery scandal. Maybe a year from now, the NCAA has whacked their basketball program, but now the NCAA is gone. To me, buying a year, and here's the thing, and Lev, you know the man. Clay Helton is, people are so critical of him. Everybody seems to agree he's a good man.
Yeah.
Who tries to do things the right way.
Yes.
And might be a mediocre football coach as a result, but I would not feel bad at all if I was USC giving Clay Helton one more year. I think that he's a good dude who's not going to embarrass you. And, you know, a year from now, you reevaluate and you see.
Brant Keithy, 3-star, by the way.
Wow.
Superstar tight end for Utah.
Wow.
So Clay Helton is retained for another year to play devil's advocate with Ryan. It's super unpopular among the fan base. Like, however unpopular you think, like, Kevin Sumlin is around here, multiply that by 100. And that's how things are at USC.
Fans were like doing backflips when the news came out that he was fired.
Oh yeah.
At first.
Right. No.
They were happy.
Yeah. That's sort of the irony of that story being wrong is that that's what really everyone who roots for USC wanted. I don't necessarily think it's fair, like how they view Clay Helton, but that's how they view him. And there's a lot of people saying, I'm not going to renew my season tickets. I'm not going to show up at the Coliseum. You're going to suffer the consequences for this. You've lost a fan, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not sure how much I buy that bluster because I think if they win convincingly early in the season, let's say they upset Alabama in the opener, which I don't think will happen, but who knows? I think people are going to show up. But it's tough to do what they did because he's still a lame duck. Mm-hmm. Again, like he's a lame duck for like how many years in a row now? And they haven't been recruiting at the same level,
right?
That they're used to for sure. So there's all these rumors that Graham Harrell is being pursued by Texas to be their offensive coordinator or head coach somewhere else. I mean, if they lose him, then they sort of have to start over again with an offense that was finally clicking toward the end of the season. So I don't know. It's a fascinating decision. I totally get where you're coming from with that and also with the timing of everything because Mike Bone was there for what, like a month?
Mm-hmm.
Like how can you be fully informed enough to make that decision? So I kind of understand it, but it also just puts them in this difficult limbo type situation again.
Right. Well, and if they do fire Clay Helton a year from now, they're going to say, well, recruiting isn't what we wanted it to be. Well, recruiting hasn't been what they wanted it to be because they wouldn't commit to Clay Helton long term, I think.
Maybe.
You know,
yeah.
So
kids still want to play for USC. I know that there's been this mass exodus of players from Southern California, but it's still cool to play for USC, isn't it?
Yes.
Am I wrong about that?
No.
No.
No. Yeah. No. And I don't know. I think that it's so funny. It feels weird to me, but I think it feels weird to me because USC was run so dysfunctionally under Pat Hayden and also again under Lynn Swann that an AD coming in and saying, I don't have all the facts yet, I'm going to step back and wait. Feels like something you'd do at Utah.
Right. It's a rational move.
Right. Speaking of Utah, Justin, you know, there's a big football game on Friday. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Utes, Ducks. Can we transition into this?
Absolutely.
Utes, Ducks for the Pac-12 title. I think that these were the teams that I had picked to make it, to win the North and the South, respectively. I really like both of these football teams. I think they're both representative of the league. They're both tough. They're similar, Lev. Speak a little bit to the way they're built.
Yeah, I mean, Arizona faced them back-to-back, and that was one of the points that we all made as that was happening is it's like once you faced Oregon, it's like you're not going to – nothing really new when you're facing Utah because it's very similar. They're built from the inside out, really good line play. I mean, I think Oregon has the best offensive line in the league, and Utah has the best defensive line. So that's just a fascinating matchup. Justin Herbert is the more hyped quarterback, but I think Tyler Huntley has been the more effective quarterback. And Utah, I think they're playing better right now. I think they're a more well-rounded team. Something about that Oregon offense just hasn't quite clicked. I mean, they really kind of barely, you know, skated by against Oregon State team that didn't have its starting quarterback. They lost against ASU. I think Utah can sense that if they win this game, they're most likely going to be in the playoff. You know,
you would think.
Yeah, you would think. I mean, there are a bunch of other things that have to happen, but they're in a really good position right now, being where they are. LSU takes care of business against Georgia, and Utah beats Oregon. I think something really weird would have to happen for Utah to not make it. I think they know that. I think they're a very confident team right now, and I just like the way they play. They sort of just methodically wear you down over the course of the game. That game against Colorado was tied, wasn't it, after the first quarter? Then, you know, you looked up about a half hour later and Utah was blowing them out, because that's what they do to everybody.
What's a better loss to you guys? And I know we'll give our predictions here for the Pac-12 championship here in a couple minutes, but what's a better loss? Kansas State, kind of in the middle of the Big 12 season, or USC to start off the year? Because at the beginning of Pac-12 play, that loss to USC looked like a bad loss because it was at the hands of a backup quarterback. Little did we know that backup quarterback was actually pretty good, right? It was Keaton Slovis that
It was Matt Fink.
It was Matt Fink.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That was the game. Yeah, Slovis got hurt in that game.
Jeez, Luis. So, man, that's pretty bad.
I know. That it's sort of like, okay, you've got the Friday night road game factor, but then you've got the third string quarterback factor that sort of, they offset each other. And I think when you look at USC and Kansas State, they have identical records, right? They're both 8-4 at the end of the day. So I think those are about equal. You know, they're both conference road losses. They're both close games. It's not like either side got blown out. So when you're, you know, comparing the resumes of Oklahoma and Utah, the difference to me between those two is that Utah's been blowing out everybody.
Point differential.
Whereas Oklahoma, lately, it's been a struggle for them. They barely beat Iowa State at home. They barely beat TCU at home. And they really should have lost to Iowa State. I mean, Iowa State was a 2-point conversion away, from winning that game. And this is in Norman. And to me, when I do my rankings, that matters a lot. Like, where are these games taking place?
See, Utah is fifth in college football in point differential. I mean, they're, like you said, they're blowing teams out. But I was watching, Get Up the other day. And of course, we talked about this, Ryan. Paul Feinbaum, the mouth of the South, said, there's no way Utah gets in because it's Utah. That's what he said. It's Utah. It's not sexy. It's not Oklahoma. It's not Jalen Hurts, Lincoln Riley. This doesn't add to TV ratings. And I'm like, you shouldn't add a team to the college football playoff just because what you think is going to be better for TV. You add a team to the college football playoff because you think they deserve to be there. And I think Utah all year long has shown that they are capable of being in the CFP.
The CFP committee does not take that into consideration at all. At least they're not supposed to.
Right. They're not supposed to.
They're not supposed to. That's just Paul Feinbaum trying to troll and get his name out there, get a soundbite, get people to, you know, ESPN producers are probably telling him to say something controversial and ridiculous. Someone pointed out, in regard to that, isn't Oklahoma winless in like 3 appearances mm-hmm. in the college football playoff? So, I mean, is it a bigger brand name? Yes. But if that's what we're basing this on, then Alabama should get in, right, even though they're 10-2 because right, they're a bigger brand name. Well, I mean, people are going to watch the college football playoff regardless.
I think you have to acknowledge, though, that it is a TV show, and that, you know, if you have Jalen Hurts out there and if you have Lincoln Riley out there, they're going to be tough to leave home. I think Utah not only needs to win, but I think Utah needs to win decisively. I think Utah can punch its own ticket by beating Oregon by, you know, 10 or more, and looking good doing it. This cannot be a game where it's, you know, 9-6. This cannot be a game where, you know, people are falling down and it's, you know, 41-38. I think Utah needs to come out and win decisively and win a certain way to convince these people that they're in. Also, by the way, you know what's going to help them? Kicking off at 6 at night or 5 at night Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern. There's not going to be a Pac-12 after dark element to this. All of the country can turn on, is it ABC?
Yeah, ABC.
Yeah,
yeah. It's also the Chris Fowler, Kirk Herbstreit, Maria Taylor team.
Right. Every person in the country with a television can watch this game in a somewhat reasonable hour. To me, that's a good sign. And I bet that the country, sort of the national sentiment on the Pac-12 will change after they watch these two teams. Again, the Pac-12 has this reputation for being soft and for being sort of, you know, video game football, you know, 41-38, 40, you know, 60-55. These two teams are about as throwback as they come. These two teams are the closest things we have to a Southeastern Conference team in the league. And, you know, to me, I think people will watch them, realize that they're sound fundamental football teams that play well and can match up with anybody in the country. And I bet that nationwide, they're singing a little bit of a different tune about the Pac-12 come Saturday morning.
It's sort of a weird situation though. Like if Utah really blows out Oregon, people would just say, oh, Oregon was never any good, you know? And if it's a close game, they'll say, oh, well, then Utah's not that good. So I feel like they need to win by about 14, you know, like, which I'll predict that. How about that? Like, you know,
good segue.
30-16. Utah.
I don't think it's going to be a 14-point game. I say 10. I'll say 38-28.
I'm not sure Utah can score 38 points on Oregon's defense. I think that this is going to be old-timey football. I think this is going to be like watching the Southeastern Conference game on a Saturday. I think that, you know, let's go 20-10, something like that. I think it's going to be defense. I think it's going to be ground and pound. Neither of these teams are going to give an inch in terms of physicality and things like that. I think that both teams want it to be a physical run-based football game. And if that's the case, I think it's going to be low scoring. I'll even take the extra step and say this game is over in less than 3 hours.
Wow.
I'll say we finish up by 9 o'clock Tucson time. A lot of running. Utes win by 10. Get the number 4 seed. And then all of a sudden you have got something really fun. Really fun on December 28th.
Yeah, that'll never happen. The game won't be under 3 hours. That's ridiculous. Can I say one thing about Chris Peterson quick before we go?
Yeah.
I was listening to Ralph Russo's AP Top 25 podcast, and he had Paul Meyerberg on from USA Today, and they were talking about Peterson. And I thought they made a really interesting point that he doesn't really like recruiting that much. And they thought if he was going to resurface a year from now, that it would be in the NFL. And that makes a lot of sense. He's never really like been into the games that you have to play on the recruiting front. I don't think he would be a good fit at a place like USC. You know, I think he's much more comfortable, in a smaller town. I mean, not that Seattle is a small town, but it's a smaller market, than LA is. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him go that route. If/when he resurfaces in coaching in 2021.
Can I just wildly speculate?
Sure.
You ready? Justin?
Cowboys.
Nope. Pete Carroll to the Chargers, Chris Peterson to the Seahawks. Thoughts?
I wouldn't mind that.
You're a Charger fan?
I wouldn't mind that one bit.
Interesting.
I would love to see Uncle Pete.
The Chargers could put butts in seats in Los Angeles by bringing Pete Carroll back.
Wow.
You could throw him more money than he'd ever seen in his life. Just say, hey, fill it with your guys. And to me, that would make a ton of sense. I think Seattle would consider it an upgrade. I think the Chargers would consider it an upgrade. And, you know, Chris Peterson would get to stay in kind of his adopted town there.
What a fascinating scenario painted by Ryan. I love it.
I love Anthony Lynn, though.
You love Anthony Lynn?
I think Anthony Lynn's a good coach.
He might be, but he's not Pete Carroll.
True.
Real quick. I'm sorry. I'm stealing the mic from you. What genius coach said you are, what your record says you are? Is that Parcells?
It was Parcells.
Parcells.
Yeah.
What are the Chargers right now? Really? 4-10? What are they? 6-8?
The Justin sad face.
4-10. 4-10.
GIF is happening and live right in front of us.
No moral victories, but all those are by one possession. in typical Charger fashion. They made the playoffs last year. Anyways, that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Don't forget Pac-12 Championship between number 5 Utah and number 13 Oregon kicking off at 6 o'clock in Tucson. You can watch that game on ABC. Well, the game's in Santa Clara, but Tucson time, 6 o'clock. Anyways, make sure you download the Wildcaster app. It's free and available on the App Store or Google Play. Also, subscribe to the Wildcast podcast on Apple Podcasts. For Lev, for Ryan, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.